Welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, brought to you by TournamentPokerEdge.com, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to poker tournament strategy. Now here's your host, Clayton Fletcher.
Hello once again, everybody, and welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, sponsored by America's Card Room. Yes, you heard me correctly. The rumors are true. ACR is now the official sponsor of the Tournament Poker Edge podcast. I am absolutely ecstatic. My name is Clayton Fletcher, and I'm your host, coming to you from beautiful Los Angeles, California, where I've been participating in something known as the LA Poker Open at the Commerce Casino, and also performing in various comedy clubs around the general area. But getting back to ACR, next weekend they're doing something called the Bountiful Weekend, and you guys can get free entries into this really cool tournament series that's happening the same weekend as Thanksgiving here in the United States. And the way you do that is you want to click the link in the description of this podcast, where you will find the link to our Discord. You want to become a member of the TPE Discord and learn how you can get a seat into one of these bountiful weekend tournaments, courtesy of our brand new sponsor, America's Card Room. Now, what's going on with these bountiful weekend tournaments? It's a really cool idea. If they are PKOs, okay, obviously my favorite format and a format that is growing and growing every day in popularity. The deal is, if you knock out an ACR pro, which, by the way, I am not one. So if you knock me out, you don't get anything special, I don't think. But if you knock out any of the actual ACR pros, the Ebony Kennys, the Chris Moneymakers, the Michael Longcar, you guys know the ACR pros. Well, if you knock out any of them, you get double the amount that you would normally have collected for busting that player in the PKO format. So if the bounty is supposed to be $250, you would win $500. And we're going to be giving away tickets for you guys to free roll your way into these tournaments. You have to join our Discord by clicking the link in the description. All right, so obviously this has been a long time coming. I've been hinting at it for quite a while. You guys know I keep saying there's going to be a big announcement coming, and I didn't mean to tease you. It's just we had to get all of our ducks in a row as far as this sponsorship. But needless to say, I am absolutely over the moon. You guys know I play on ACR all the time. It is already home to our dear friend Killing Bird's home game. You guys can get up-to-date information on everything that's going on with TPE and this podcast and our new sponsor by clicking the link in the description and becoming a member of the TPE Discord. But suffice to say, I'm a very, very happy host. All right, let's get into the continuing coverage of the Venom PKO that I played in earlier this month. It's a $2,650 buy-in in the Progressive Knockout Bounty format, and it's played on the aforementioned America's Card Room. So we're going to continue the same table that we were talking about on our previous episode last week. The blinds have gone up. It's a little while later. We're now at $3,750 and $7,500 with an 850 big blind ante, I guess. Yeah, that's right. So yeah, there is 20,250, nice round number there, in the middle when we are dealt ace queen in the cutoff. Ace of hearts, queen of hearts, so ace queen suited. And the action goes as follows. It's folded around to the same villain from the last hand that we discussed in last week's episode. Just as a reminder, he's on our immediate right. In this case, he's in the hijack. He's an excellent professional player that I am quite familiar with. He is capable of a lot of different things, and I think that a good strategy against a player like this is to try my best to stay out of hands with him unless I have strong enough value in terms of starting cards. So I think ace queen of hearts certainly qualifies here. So the action is folded to this player who just clicks a little bit above the min raise. The big blind is 7,500 and he makes it 16,500 with about 400K in his stack. Now we are not doing particularly well at this stage of the tournament with only about 260,000 in our stack for an M of around 13 and approximately 30 times the big blind. So it's a little bit of an awkward stack. If we three bet, I think we need to call it off if the original raiser shoves, which is not really that much fun with ace queen of hearts. I don't think we can fold because our hand is too strong and the original raiser is also in late position, as are we. So I elect to just call. Now, as we all know, TPE coach Andrew Brokus, the great one, always reminds us that calling is not a compromise. And I firmly believe in that. I fully subscribe to that philosophy. I want to be clear. I'm not compromising by calling here. Calling is actually the best play, in my opinion. I think that when we get 30 big blinds all in versus this opponent, we are often going to have the second best hand. We will be behind ace-king or possibly king-king. We don't block that hand, please note. We don't block king-king. We do block ace-king a little bit. I think he would sometimes shove all in with jacks or tens, maybe, but maybe just flat the three bet with that hand. So as you can see, his getting it in range with this big of a stack is going to be a little too strong. So I don't want a three bet, and I certainly don't want a three bet fold because I will be pretty close to pot commitment at that point. Like, for example, I don't want to put in six or seven of my 30 big blinds and then let a hand as strong as ace queen suited go without seeing the flop at all. So I don't want to put myself in that bad position. I think the hand is just a little too strong to fold. So I call, and the good news is we're going to be in position. The bad news is we're going to be up against an opponent who has a skill edge over us. The blinds fold, so we're heads up, and the pot is now around 53K. Hero with 245K remaining in his stack, so we're in an awkward SPR situation, which I hate to be in. We really don't want to like flop top pair and try to get all in with a SPR around five. In that case, you would probably almost always be behind. It's just too many chips to put in with one pair. So we're going to have to do some type of pot control, even if we flop well, which, by the way, we are about to as the flop comes. Queen of clubs, five of clubs, deuce of spades, queen five deuce with two clubs, hero holding the ace of hearts, queen of hearts, and the opponent checks on over to us. So what to do with ace queen? We've got top pair, top kicker. I think we need to bet for value. We don't want to get check raised. Again, if we get all these chips in with just ace queen, we're probably going to be behind the vast majority of the instances. But as we look at it, he checks. We need to bet, right? We've got top pair, top kicker. We just don't want to get check raised. I decide to bet pretty big, partly because I don't want to get check raised, and also because I want to make him pay when he is behind, and especially make him pay when he's got a hand like ace jack of clubs for the flush draw. So we bet 40,000 into the 53,000 pot, and villain just calls. So far, so good. We're looking good with about 133,000 in the middle. Hero holding the ace queen and only 205,000 in the stack. The turn comes the seven of hearts. So our board is now queen of clubs, five of clubs, deuce of spades, seven of hearts. And now we have about a pot and a half remaining in our stack. Villain decides to check again. And now this is a great spot for us to practice that pot control that I mentioned earlier. I decide to check behind. Sometimes Villain will have us beat with a hand like pocket kings or pocket aces, played in a pretty unorthodox way, but again, this is a talented professional opponent who is capable of a lot of different moves and is probably taking copious notes on us and the way we play. And it's a really good strategy against me, by the way, to check when you have a monster, because I bet a little bit more often and in more spots than I theoretically should. And so if I make mistakes, they tend to be of the aggressive nature rather than the passive nature. So for all those reasons, I decided to check back. I don't want to be put to a decision for my whole stack, even though against most opponents, you should be willing to do that with ace queen on a queen high board. Against this guy, I'm just not so sure. I need to tread lightly and carefully. And so I decide to check behind for pot control. Now, the river comes the nine of spades for a final board of queen five, deuce seven, nine with two clubs and two spades, so no flush. And now villain wakes up and bets 45K into the 132,000 pot. So, what to do with top pair, top kicker against this villain? We could maybe consider raising, but again, if we raise, we've got to be willing to call it off if he shoves. Because, I mean, honestly, we only have a pot and a half left. And by the time we call this bet, we're going to just have a pot-sized bet left. I don't really want to raise here against an opponent that I think would call with a wide range, make too many curious calls to river raises. Yeah, you can do all that, but this guy knows what he's doing. So yeah, he will sometimes have like a king queen type of hand that, again, he played in a very unorthodox way. And we might want to kick ourselves in that case for not getting maximum value for top pair, top kicker. But look, guys, remember one of the fundamental theoretical rules of tournament poker: the chips that you lose are worth a lot more than the chips you win. So I'm trying to accumulate, but not really knowing where I stand when he called my large flop bet. I think checking behind on the turn is good. Had he checked again on the river, I would have bet more than this bet. He's putting in about a third of the pot here, and I probably would have gone a little bit bigger than that. I might have bet maybe about half the pot, I think is about right. Trying to get that call from a hand like pocket jacks, which feels right. Like the way he's playing his hand, it does feel like pocket jacks. Could be a big part of his range. The next question is, if I raise this bet, can I get called by worse? And I think against some opponents you can. Against this opponent, there aren't that many hands that he's going to call my river raise with. So I think that calling is better than raising, because when he does anything besides fold, we're probably beat anyway. So I decide to just flat this small bet. And villain turns over the queen of spades, 10 of spades, for top pair, worse kicker than we have. So yeah, maybe I could have made more money on that hand, but I think that against a good opponent in a spot where we're not very sure where we stand, in a very slow tournament with very long levels that move up very slowly, it's not necessary to try to get all in with a pair of queens when your SPR on the flop is five. So I practiced pot control. Possibly it could have worked out better if I just would have three bet and tried to get it all 30 big blinds in. But who knows? I'm not going to second guess it. I think that I'm pretty happy with how I played the hand despite not getting maximum value. Let me know what you think, guys. You know, I want to hear from you on Twitter at Clayton Comic. Assuming that Twitter is still a thing as we speak, as I record this on Thursday night, it seems like there's a lot of news around Twitter and all of its employees quitting. But assuming we still have a Twitter to communicate on, please find me on Twitter at Clayton Comic and let me know what you think of this hand, of this partnership with America's Card Room, of my hairstyle, of anything else that you want to express an opinion on. I always love to hear from you. So let's do another hand, shall we? We got moved to another table. And, you know, I wasn't really loving that other table anyway. So I wasn't too disappointed about being moved. So the next hand I want to cover comes from the 4,500, 9,000 level. And of course, there's also an ante, and in this case, that ante is 1,200 per player. So this table is a little bit better than the other one. A lot of really loose action. We've only played like two and a half orbits on this table, but it already feels a lot more comfortable for me. A lot of players just playing too many pots and playing them too passively. So, you know, that's the vibe we're looking for in tournaments. That's kind of the easiest table to join. So I'm happy to be here with what I perceive to be a lot of inexperienced, or let's just say non-professional players. And one of those players has a whole lot of chips. By the way, I've been doing quite well at this table too, and my stack is now all the way up to 760,000, which is good for third place at this table, which features two players with over 1 million already in their stacks. So we've got some deep stack poker happening. There is one short stack at my table, and he's on my left with about 280,000. By the way, the average stack at this point in the tournament was around 480,000. And remember, the starting stack in the Venom PKO is 300,000. So the action goes one fold, and then the player in second position raises to 19,800 with 1.2 million behind. Now, I've only been at this table for about 2.5 orbits, but I've already noticed that this player is quite active. So the fact that he is raising from early position does not mean all that much to me. So the action folds to the player on my immediate right, who makes the call with 800,000 behind. So both of these guys have me covered. I should also mention there's an empty seat at this table, so we're actually playing seven-handed, and now I am next to act in the cutoff position, holding the ace of clubs, eight of clubs. So what to do with ace eight suited after two loose players have entered the pot? Now, both of these guys have been involved in way too many hands already. Now, of course, I've only been here for a short time, and you don't want to put too much stock in what you've already seen. But given that it is a seven-handed table, and given that I've already noticed a lot of action from these two, and given that I've already kind of made up my mind that neither of them is a professional poker player, I think there is a case to be made for getting involved here with the ace eight suited. If you want to fold it, I'm absolutely fine with that. But if you want to call with it, I have some questions for you. So if your instinct is to call in this spot, just ask yourself, like, what am I really hoping to flop? Ace eight suited is a pretty hard hand to hit the flop with, unless we have two clubs come out for a flush draw. Like, if you flop a pair of eights, you can't be sure it's good, especially if there's significant action after the flop. But how good are you at folding top pair, top kicker? If you flop a top pair of eights, are you going to be stuck just losing a bunch of money with this hand? Also, if you flop an ace, you may or may not have a kicker problem. How many chips are you willing to lose finding out that your eight kicker is no good? For those reasons, I don't like calling with this hand. I think that the choice should be either to fold it or to three bet. And in this spot, for the reasons I've already outlined, I decide to put in a healthy-ish three bet. Remember, the original open was to 19,000, and I made it 82,000 after one caller with my ace of clubs, eight of clubs. And after that, everyone folded and we never saw the flop. The reason I like three betting in position with this hand, especially with these deep stacks, remember guys, we have 80 plus big blinds in this situation. We've got a healthy M, and we do want to get the pots built up in any type of bounty tournament with the suited hands. Because if we happen to make the nuts versus a lesser flush, we're going to want to be able to get all in come hell or high water. So that's why, that's another case for three betting. And I should have mentioned earlier that the caller actually had a pretty healthy bounty of over $3,000. At that point in the tournament, that was a pretty big bounty. So yeah, that's another reason to try to start chipping away at that stack. If I can get him to put a lot of his chips in, maybe take the chip lead away, and then I can have a shot at that big bounty prize. But that's not the main reason to do it. The main reason to do it is I'm exploiting the fact that these guys get involved in too many hands. Many times they're just going to fold like they do here, but sometimes these loose passive players will end up calling that three bet, and then I can usually win a nice pot on most flops, even if I don't get there. Now, just limping or just flat calling behind, rather, I think it's much harder for me to take control of the pot when I miss the flop, because the most likely player to bet the flop is going to be the original raiser. But when you're the three better, they tend to check to you, and then when nobody has anything, you are the one who usually wins. No limit hold'em, particularly with deeper stacks, tends to reward aggressive play. Now, don't take that concept too far, but I do not like calling with suited medium aces, even in position, in a tournament. So that was a pretty fun hand. And after that, I had more chips than almost everyone at the table. So I was pretty happy to see it. You love to see it. It's a great outcome. And because this is such a special episode where I finally get to spill the beans on the big news I've been hinting at for months now, I'm going to give you guys one more hand from the Venom PKO as played on America's Card Room. So we got moved to yet another table. This was maybe an hour or two later, getting late in the day, probably about two-thirds of the way through day one. I believe late registration was about to close, or maybe closed after right before the level that we're playing now, which is 5,000, 10,000 with a 1,500 ante per player. In this hand, let's talk about this table first. My new table is, I'm in a pretty bad seat. To my left are two very well-known world-beating internet players. They are some of the best players on the site. And on my immediate right is one of the absolute gods of ACR, a player who has played over 10,000 tournaments on ACR with an average buy-in of over $100 and an ability rating of 99 out of a possible 100 and an average ROI of 11%, which is just absolutely ridiculous at that buy-in level. This guy is capable of this, that, the other, and so much more. So I am surrounded by sharks. I hated being at this table, but the action folds to the button, who was an amateur player who's been doing pretty well. He's got 1.2 million in his stack, and he opens to 22,500. The player on my right, who is the best player at this or virtually any other table, decides to call from the small blind the 22.5. And at this point in the tournament, the button has 1.2 million. The small blind has 860,000, and hero Clayton Comic has 700,000. So again, we're pretty deep stacked. We've got 70 bigs. We've got the queen of hearts, eight of clubs. And if you were to tell me that because this good player in the small blind has entered the pot, and because queen eight is a very, very tricky hand to play, that you want to fold even though you're getting 5.4 to 1, I actually don't hate it. I mean, against two opponents, 5.4 to 1 isn't all that compelling. The other side of the coin, however, is that we have position on the tough player. And, you know, the not-so-tough player has position on both of us. But, yeah, we're probably more worried about the small blind. What does this flat call from the small blind even mean? Like, how do you range a player like this? You know, he's very aggressive. He's got about a 23 VPIP with an 18 PFR, a 4.1 PFA. I'm doing HUD stats now, so just bear with me if you don't know what these numbers mean. His pre-flop 3-bet is at 11%, and I have over 600 hands on this guy, which starts to become a significant number of hands. So he's an excellent player. He's very aggressive, and he's capable of a lot of moves. So I don't hate folding, but we're trying to figure out what he has, right? So a player like that who flat calls in the small blind. He might be trapping with a monster. He might just have a hand that he wants to see the flop with from the small blind against what he probably perceives to be two opponents that he can beat. Like, my stats on ACR, like, my average buy-in is probably around $30, and my average ROI is probably around 4 or 5%. Like, I'm winning on there, but not that much. It's a pretty tough thing to do online nowadays, get your online ROI up above 10%. I mean, it's really an elite crowd that has that kind of results over 10,000 tournaments. So, yeah, I mean, it's very hard to get a read on what this means. I'm sure he's mixing up his play. He's going to have some, you know, speculative hands in his calling range. He's going to have some traps in there. I can't just three bet willy-nilly and expect to take it down a lot. I would take it down some of the time, but yeah, I think Queen 8's a little too strong, believe it or not. I think that three betting with this hand, why turn Queen 8, which is semi-playable, into 7 deuce, which is not playable at all. Folding is okay. I decide to go ahead and call and see the flop. And so we're going three ways to the flop, and with 80,000 in the middle, Hero with the Queen of Hearts, 8 of Clubs, the flop comes Queen of Diamonds, 5 of Clubs, Trey of Spades. So Queen, 5, Trey, Rainbow. So we've got top pair and no kicker. The small blind checks, and you know what? I decide to check to the razor. Now, very often, I remind you guys that when you're in a heads-up situation, you want to always check to the razor, the pre-flop razor, unless you have a very short stack or some other compelling reason not to do so. And that the solvers pretty much always have us checking to the razor when we're out of position in heads-up pots. Now, this is a three-way pot, and the rules are a little bit different. A lot of solvers are showing us that we all need to be leading out more in these situations, like apparently waking up with a hand. So I could lead with top pair, and I will do that some of the time, but in this instance, I decide to check to the razor, who obliges me by betting 29,000 into the 80,000 pot. And what to do? The small blind thankfully folds and gets the heck out of my pot, and now I'm just left with the non-professional player, the recreational player, if you will, probably a satellite winner just based on what I've seen so far at this table and his HUD stats that I've been compiling. So I decide to just call. I want to keep him in there with his bluffs. I don't want to let him off the hook in case he wants to double or even triple barrel. I think that I need to mostly be checking and calling unless the board gets pretty ugly. So yeah, I decide to call. Let me know if you would also, again, Clayton Comic on Twitter, or if by the time you're hearing this, Twitter is no longer a thing because all the employees quit and the whole building collapsed, then you can just find me on the TPE Discord, which you can access by clicking the link in the description of this podcast. So let's recap. On the flop, three ways, Hero in the big blind with Queen 8. The flop was Queen 5 Trey, and it went check, check, bet, fold, and Hero called. And now on the turn with 135K in the middle, Hero with over 600K behind, the turn comes the 8 of Diamonds for a board of Queen of Diamonds, 5 of Clubs, Trey of Spades, 8 of Diamonds. So Queen 5 Trey 8 with 2 diamonds, giving Hero top 2 pair, and we check, and again, Villain decides to bet, and this time he puts in a healthy 93,000 into the 135,000 pot. So we are ecstatic. We've got top 2 pair. At this point, we want our opponent to have a hand like pocket aces, pocket kings, something that's going to be willing to put in more chips. Now, do you guys want to raise this bet or do you want to just call? Now, I'm afraid that we will lose the bluffs, like when he has just a nothing hand, like ace 10 or ace king, where he just doesn't have a pair yet. He's always going to fold to the check raise. But I believe, especially when we're in a PKO bounty situation, we need to be optimistic and try to get our stack above the average stack at the table, giving us access to all of the various bounty prizes, which at this point in the tournament, there's one guy at our table that has a bounty of over $4,800. So the bounties are really getting up there in some cases. We want to have everybody covered so we can collect those bounties. So let's be optimistic and target hands like pocket aces, pocket queens, ace queen, and the like. We check raise to 270,000. And I remember saying out loud, come on, baby, go all in. We really wanted him to shove. But unfortunately, villain decides to fold. What do you guys think? Do you like the check raise on the turn? Do you think I should continue to slow play and hope that he might triple barrel bluff? Note that we do not have a diamond, and there are two diamonds on the board. So possibly we are protecting a little bit from various flush draws our opponent may have picked up on the turn. Now, a lot of people's double barrel range only includes turn cards that improve their equity in the hand. So maybe it is valuable to just make those hands pay to see the river if they're so inclined. The theory being that villain would have checked behind if he had not picked up additional equity on the turn. So maybe we're just going to be able to get a lot of chips in when he's got a hand like ace king of diamonds or pocket aces, pocket kings. So with that logic, I really do like the check raise, even though it didn't work out this time. But as always, I want to know what you guys think. This episode has been chock full of strategy, but the bottom line is I am on cloud nine to be able to finally tell you guys about our new relationship with America's Card Room. Now, you guys know Derek Killingbird Tenbush has had his home game on there for a long time. He is an ACR Stormer, as are several of our previous guests. But now things are getting so official that as the official sponsor of the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, ACR has gone so far to make me my own avatar. So if you end up at my table on ACR, you will no longer see me as a basketball player, but rather you will see a beautiful rendering of me either looking happy or looking frustrated or looking however an avatar can look in a poker hand. So I love my new avatar. I love my new sponsor, and all of us are very happy about this. So if you are not yet playing on ACR and you want to join so that you can be a part of all that we have going on with them, you can find a link in the TPE Discord that will help you, get a deposit bonus or some kind of reload bonus or whatever. So we've got all kinds of things going on. We need you guys to get on the Discord by clicking the link in the description. And that'll do it for this episode. I hope you guys are as happy about this big news as we are. And with special thanks to our friends at America's Card Room for everyone here at Tournament Poker Edge. I'm Clayton Fletcher. Thank you so much for listening. I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please. Fold them, let them hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me. Luck and intuition, play the cards with babes to start. And after she's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on her heart. Oh, whoa, 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 whoa. I'll get her heart, show her what I got. Oh, whoa. Gambling is fun when you're with me. I love it. Russian roulette is not the same without a gun. And baby, when it's love, if it's not rough, it isn't fun. Oh, whoa, whoa, oh, whoa, whoa.
can't read my poker face. She's got to love nobody. Can't read my, no, she can't read my poker face.